Greetings, everyone. Greetings, everyone. This is Britt Mosley hosting your show today, Integrity in Law Enforcement and Correction. Before we get started, I'd like to give my condolences and prayers goes out to Miss Virginia Newell, whose sister passed away this morning. Our prayers and thought are with you, Virginia. She was going to be the guest speaker on the show today, but due to this untimely death of her sister, our prayers and thought goes out to you. Today we're gonna touch on numerous topics, and one of them is going to be mentally impaired people that are incarcerated in today's prisons that's being supervised by staff that really don't have the formal training and the experience to deal with the different types of challenges that these type of inmates bring about. And in a lot of cases, it's misinterpreted. It get called bad behavior, and a lot of times inmates are treated in a brutal way simply because they have mental defects. And there's a law circulating now that trying to change this to get some type of training for law enforcement and correctional personnel. And this is going to be like an open mic section. So if anybody want to call in and talk about some of these subjects, they're welcome to do it. The call-in number is 347-857-3293. So if you want to, you got something that you'd like to share with the listening audience, please give a call. But there's a lot of things going on lately in correction. The Attorney General Eric Holder has made some real bold and dynamic steps. One of them being getting a lot of low-level drug offense repealed on formerly incarcerated individual, and trying to decriminalize the marijuana charges that affects so many. Currently, there's about 5.6 million individuals in the United States that are not allowed to vote because of a criminal offense, and this law has been intact for over a century. It was originally used to keep former slaves from being having the opportunity to vote by giving them criminal records, and this law has been intact for, like I say, over a century, and the Attorney General is addressing this problem. I think it's long overdue, and I commend Attorney General Holder for this bold step that he's making. And as we know, there's a real problem with mass incarceration in the black community. And it's greatly affect people of color. And there's just a numerous of reason why they're so disproportionate incarcerated. One of the main reasons is that they like the revenue for getting good counsel. And a lot of times they have to plea on and settle on whatever the state is offering them. And what it has created, unbelievable, staggering numbers of incarcerated individuals. And I'm being a former prison correctional officer and also a prison administrator. I know firsthand about what's going on in the prison system at the time when I worked in there. Now, I hope things have changed. I worked in the prison system in the 90s and in the early 2000s. And what was trending then was the so-called war on drugs. And what this did was just loaded the prison throughout the United States. But now this mass incarceration is backfiring on the states, and it's creating a terrible economic hardship on a lot of states trying to keep all these people incarcerated. And so there's a lot of efforts that's put forth to try to change this. But the community is going to have to start embracing themselves for what I see is going to be another problem that going to arouse, is that we're going to have an influx of individuals put back into community. A lot of these individuals, while they was in prison, whether they didn't take advantage of or didn't get the opportunity to get them a marketable skill. And what's going to happen is we're going to have formerly incarcerated individuals trying to compete with the people that's already unemployed, that's looking for a job. And you know what this can lead to? You know, this can lead to even further incarceration, because usually property crimes increase when you have a high unemployment rate. And so we're going to have to get behind a lot of these organizations that's trying to change this. And this is one of the reasons why I got into this advocacy that I'm doing towards prison. When I worked in the prison system, there was a lot of wrong and unjust things happening. I was a victim of one of these wrong and just things. When you go to the academy in the prison, to assist the inmates in the rehabilitation process. And I found out the hard way that sometimes this can land you in a lot of trouble with the staff. And I often spoke out against brutality and unjust treatment, because that's what I was taught in the academy. You know, that's some of their own policies and procedures, that you're supposed to speak out against unethical, corrupt behavior by staff members. And when you become a whistleblower like I did, I almost landed in prison myself. I had individuals to try to plant marijuana. Well, actually, they did plant marijuana at my desk, and it was just a matter of minutes before they was going to come in and bust me with drug possession. It would have been a setup, and it was very disturbing. And that's one of the reasons why I want to be a voice for some of the operations that occur in the correctional system in this country. And I would like to get some support behind this from people, because a prison affects a large majority of the people in this country. You know, you either got a relative, a friend, or what have you, and been in the system. And it's a difficult path back to trying to get on the right track when there are so many obstacles in your way. And I think this is what the Attorney General is doing is really going to help a lot of guys, boys, getting employment and getting them back into society. Where they want to, you know, as we all know, voting is a fundamental right, and a lot of people sacrifice, some even the ultimate sacrifice, their life people was beaten. And a lot of, you know, baby boomers like me know the story. Some of the newer generation probably only just read about it, but we knew what it was like. I was brought up in Mississippi, and, you know, Mississippi had a storied history about social injustice. And so I don't take voting for granted. It's really something that goes deep in my heart. And so I think that what the Attorney General is doing is commendable. And we need to applaud him for doing, taking this step. It takes a lot of courage on his part, you know, with all the problems that we're seeing going on trying to suppress the vote. And for him to make a move like what he's making, I think it's very commendable. And if anybody out in the radio land would like to call in, that number is 347-857-3293. I'm anticipating having a guest on later in the show that was going to bring to our attention about this this new law they're trying to get passed about dealing with mentally impaired inmates. She has a very broad knowledge of this, and she's a part of this channel that I'm on called the Human Rights Demand. And she's put a lot of work and effort in. She's very knowledgeable of a lot of the issues about mentally incarcerated individual, mentally impaired incarcerated individual. Her name is Miss Mary Neal. And like I say, later on in the show, she will be on to enlighten us on a lot of the things that involves the mental health of incarcerated individuals. But if there's anyone who would like to shine some light on this subject, feel free to do it. This is more or less open mic. Anybody would like to voice, have some input, please do. But I would like to just talk about just the incarceration period. You know, lately I've been reading a lot of things that's very disturbing. And to find out that so many African Americans have been targeted for incarceration. And it was deliberate. And I know firsthand that when I worked in the prison system, I had access to records. I could see the disparity in the sentencing process. It was so disproportionate that it was just mind-boggling. You know, it's shameful and hurtful to see guys doing 40 and 50 years for an offense that a lot of guys would just get probation for. If they was, a lot of the white inmates didn't have the same type of sentencing. And I find that very disturbing. But, so that's why I became an advocate. I feel very strongly about it, and I am going to be one till my last breath. I'll always be an advocate. And prison. My experience in the prison, it was bittersweet. I enjoyed helping inmates turn their life around. that was about the most rewarding thing that I did when I was working in the prison system. I got a chance to see the core problem of what was going on in the system. And a lot of these guys was just could have turned out a lot better for them in their life. They didn't have so many negative hurdles that was put before them. And when I got a chance to work in the system and work in the units, I got a chance to just find out firsthand. You get a chance to. It was just like doing time. Actually, you're right in the zones and with the inmates, and you interact with them. And once they develop a trust, they would open up to you and they would tell their story. And man, I tell you, some of those stories were just heart wrenching. And then when you get a chance to see through all these hardship that these guys have had in their life, they made my life look like a Sunday picnic. And one of the things that I gained by being a former corrections officer was I got a new appreciation for what it really takes to be strong, be a strong person. And to know that you got a guy doing time for something that he didn't do, and then he still had good spirit and still wanted to turn his life around, it was very spiritually uplifting for me. And it made me a stronger person. And once you get to know some of these guys, if they just had just a few breaks, you know, their story could have been a lot different. And so I did get a chance to influence a lot of inmates positive. But, you know, even though you taught that in the academy to help guys with the rehabilitation process, but you can find yourself in a lot of trouble by just the sheer fact of doing that. And even though that's what you was taught to do, to help a guy with the rehabilitation process and treat them humanely. So I tried, and you know, this is what I was, never had any training in law enforcement. It's the first time I really had any dealings with the criminal justice system when I worked there. And the job didn't pay that much money, but the thing, just seeing these guys, helping guys turn their life around and encourage them to go and get a marketable skill and getting a chance to see guys when they get released from prison and out in the society doing good, working on jobs and turning their life around and staying out of trouble, that was rewarding. It was a very rewarding feeling to meet inmates out on the street that you knew their story and what they had been and where they are now. And that's what it was all about for me. And it was a bit of sweet experience, but I persevered. And so this is some of the reason why I speak out against all the wrongdoing and the injustice of the criminal justice system. And it's going to take a joint effort out of the people of this country, because sooner or later, you're going to be affected by it either directly or indirectly, where you're going to be, if we don't change our way of dealing with incarceration, we're going to have serious problems as far as crime in this country. And it seemed like to me that that would be something that we would want to do. It's disturbing that to see the amount of money that's put in incarcerating people versus it's plain as day. It just makes good sense. You know, it helps the economy, and it's a feel-good situation when you see people that's doing just doing the right thing. And you would think the country with this history that that's what they want to do. This is what we want. But we have allowed the prison system to become a part of economic development in this country. Excuse me. And everything is for profit. But usually when you do things like mass incarceration, you know, you pay for it in the long run, because we're going to have a generation of people that's not productive. They're not part of the American system. They're not working and being a productive individual. So we all know what idle minds and idle time is going to result in. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. And so we need to seriously think about this with this incarceration and get behind all the groups and the movement to end this mass incarceration and get these young gentlemen out on the back in society so they can be productive citizens again. Incarceration creates a tremendous hardship on families. When I worked in the system, visitation was always a very heart-wrenching experience when you see families come to the prison system and you see young kids come there. And their father is incarcerated, and they can't figure out what's going on, why he can't go back home with them. And very touching. Now, I know a lot of people think I may sound like a bleeding heart liberal, but prisons are necessary. That some people's that should be never able to get out of prison. They should be in prison forever. But these nonviolent offenders, I have a problem with that. I have a problem with it because it's not a just system. It's targeted certain individuals. And I'm not trying to denounce the correctional officers and law enforcement people, because the majority of them are good, hard-working people, and they put their lives on the line every day. And they just like everybody else, they want, at the end of the day, they want to go home to their families. But their job is stressful beyond words, because everything happens so fast. And law enforcement and correction, and you have to make spot judgments, and you want to make good judgment all the time, but a lot of times you don't make good judgment, and it all goes back to what I was hitting on earlier about people that got mental problems, being out in the streets. Being a law enforcement officer, you have no way of knowing what a person's mental state is. And you respond to how they're behaving. And just because a person has a mental problem, they are highly dangerous. Well, as we all know, you know, a mental person is capable of doing tremendous damage to people and property. And so that's what law enforcement people are trained to do, to protect, serve and protect. they're not trained to identify mental illness and mental challenged people. And so when a lot of times these situations arise, we have a tendency they want to judge a law enforcement person for their action. But they're only human too. And a lot of times they are in fearful of their safety and the safety of the people that they're supposed to protect. And now that don't dismiss the fact that some of these guys abuse their power, though. And but it's not widespread. It's a minority, but it seems like it's widespread because it gets a lot of press. And it but nobody never talks about the day to day duties that law enforcement people that do good things, they never get the kind of press that the ones that do bad things get. But same way it is in correction, you know, it's just like anything. You got people that's going to abuse their authority and misuse their power. And it's an ongoing thing. It's going to always be, but we need to try to work to minimize these types of incidents. And it's a juggling act, you know. You got to deal with a person that's behaving kind of wrongly and scary, you know. And you have to make a quick decision, and a lot of times it affects you for the rest of your life. Because, you know, most people don't feel good about taking one's life. And I see a caller here, 843. Would you like to make a comment? Oh, maybe not. Well, I don't know what happened to Miss Neal. I was expecting her to be on the show. Here she is now.
And I am on the show. I am here.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Mosley, I had a little emergency. I'm a little late. And you also have another guest on the show. And if you have time to let them speak now, it's 8443.
Yes.
8443, how are you today? Okay, 8443. All right. Maybe they don't want to speak. Well, thank you.
Right.
Thank you so much, Mr. Britton Mosley, for inviting me. And I have a little delay, but you've been talking with the people, I understand, about the new mental health care bill, H.R. 3717, is that right?
That's correct.
Wonderful. I was so glad that we had the opportunity to talk about that last night as well, and that was on the assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill, a Blog Talk radio show. And I asked that people go and get the link to that and listen to the wonderful comments that you and other guests made. And you brought out an area that I'm not sure is actually in the bill, and it needs to be. And that is that, you know, the bill provides training for police officers in crisis intervention so that mentally disturbed individuals who are being apprehended for arrest are not killed or not seriously injured when the officers have CIT training. And you suggested that prison guards need that same training, because if police officers need it for the, say, from a few minutes to several hours that it might take to apprehend someone who's having a mental health crisis in the community, how much more do prison guards need the training when they are literally locked up with people among whom half may have mental illness? Because we understand that about half of our inmates, 1.25 million, have mental illness to some level, to some degree. We're not saying that that many have acute mental illness, but that many have been identified as having mental illness to some degree. And I agree with you so much, Brother Mosley, that we definitely need CIT training, that's crisis intervention training for prison guards as well as police. In fact, I would say we need it equally, if not more so, for our prison and jail guards. As you know, my brother, Larry Neal, was an acute mental patient. He had schizophrenia, that's paranoid schizophrenia, as well as a heart condition. And he was arrested, secretly arrested, in Memphis Shelby County Jail, and somehow he died. We have not been given information these 10 years about how he died, why he died, or even why he was arrested. But I do know that death is never far off from acute mental patients in jail. The possibility exists, and so we need to reduce that possibility. And this health care bill would be an excellent place to put that provision for training of our correctional officers regarding mental illness. And I thank you for bringing up that suggestion.
You're welcome. Yes, excuse me. I had touched on that with the audience about the bill, but I knew you was more abreast of it than I am. But I'm more, you know, as far as being experienced hand on with some of the challenges that correctional people deal with. You know, when you leave it up to a unskilled person to try to diagnose behavior, you can come up with all kind of weird decisions. You know, a lot of times inmates will be dealing with a mental crisis and you think they're under the influence of a drug, or you think they're just being rowdy, or just, you know, just all kind of things. That's your first thought being a correctional officer, that is, you know, it's something negative. And it's not fair to a skilled correctional officer to put that kind of responsibility on them. And because a lot of times when you leave things like that up to untrained people, you don't get good results in the prison system. And anytime you abuse an inmate, you're putting your fellow officers that works in these units safety in jeopardy. Because a lot of times these guys get angry and they retaliate against an innocent officer that have no way of knowing what kind of experience that this inmate just had, you know, with other officers. And it's a much-needed amendment to that bill that needs to be done. Because like
well,
I was
we're
telling,
not, I'm not absolutely sure that it's not covered, so I'm certainly going to read it through and
right.
See if our training for correctional officers is provided in the bill. And if it's
right.
Not, then I certainly think that it's something that Representative Tim Murphy might want to entertain, the idea of amending the bill and adding an element for training of correctional officers, because that's where they, you know, I know that one of the things that this bill would do is help to transcend many people who are incarcerated for mental illness back into their communities for community health care. And the reason it would do that is because, you know, it has in their AOT programs, and AOT programs are assisted outpatient treatment programs that provide for mandated continuous psychiatric care after release from prison, and also subsistence assistance. And, you know, that right there alone would reduce the number of mentally ill persons who recidivate and go back to jail. That would reduce that greatly if they had continuous ongoing psychiatric treatment provided, and not just provided, but demanded after they leave incarceration. So, but right now, there are 1.25 million who are already in the system, and with our making provisions for people who are outside, we must not forget that our largest majority of people with mental illness from the working class and the poor are already ensnared in the justice system. And so we must keep that in mind with any health care bills that are passed. So that is a big input. That is big input from Britton Mosley, the suggestion that if the training of correctional officers is not provided for in the bill, it certainly would be a huge good amendment for H.R. 3717, which is called Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. The thing is that nobody is out of sight, out of mind in prison. Only a few people who are incarcerated have no one on the outside who love them and who are caring for them and looking forward to their release and actually working for their release. Most people who are incarcerated have people who care about them. They're someone's son, someone's uncle, someone's best friend, someone's husband, someone's wife. Everybody has connections outside. Now, we know that acute mentally ill people don't usually vote, and I think that that's one reason why they have been not necessarily given a priority place in politics and making decisions that have great impact on their lives. But we must keep in mind that each prisoner is likely to have about four people, at least four people, and that is very understated. I'm sure they have more. But let's just say that out of those who have none and those who have many, we could just round it off to say that each prisoner has at least four people that they're close to and who care about them and care about their treatment while they are incarcerated, while they are serving time. And of those four, I would say that two at least are likely to be people who do vote. So there you have it. If you have 1.25 million people behind bars, you have millions of voters who are interested in human rights for prisoners. And then that is not counting all of the public that advocates and activists are working very hard to educate regarding the abuse and brutality and the potential for death among prisoners. And so when you count everybody with a sincere interest in reducing mass incarceration and promoting human rights for prisoners, now you get, I think, a majority of Americans, because Americans do serve on juries, and we do fully realize that when we hear the evidence, very often we determine that this person deserves to be removed from society because this person did not honor and respect other people's human and civil and property rights. And so we oftentimes, as jurors, decide with the prosecutor that this is a person who needs to be removed. The question is, where do they need to be removed? I believe that acute mental patients need to be removed to safe containment in mental hospitals, not to prison. And number two, those who don't have acute mental illness and who violate people's human, civil, and property rights should be still rehabilitated. That should be the main goal. And, yes, punishment has its place, but rehabilitation should be the main goal. And no man, the condition of no man is greatly improved by brutality. In fact, that will bring out the worst in his character. Like Mr. Britton is saying, Mr. Britton was a prison guard for a number of years, and he has observed that brutality does not bring about a positive change in the prisoner. And so 90% of our inmates have a release date in their prison jacket, in their file. They have a release date. Some of them will be there a year. Some of them will be there 30, 40 years. But they have a release date. And when they are released, they will return to communities. They will shop with you. They will eat at restaurants with you. They will go to schools with you. And so, therefore, everyone has reason to be concerned about the safe containment of prisoners and the humane treatment of prisoners, lest we end up with more mentally ill persons than we have. For instance, solitary confinement has been found to cause mental illness. And I believe Mr. Britton told us last night that solitary confinement is a mechanism that is used often on the mentally ill who do not conduct themselves according to prison protocol. So therefore, their condition is worsened by solitary confinement. Would you agree with that, Mr. Britton?
I agree with you 100%. And also, what happened is a lot of the time people wind up incarcerated that you know personally from your community, that you knew their life history, that they have mental problems, and you wonder why they wind up in prison and they didn't go to a mental institution. So you know, sometimes you have a personal history of an inmate, and then when these inmates know you too, and when they do certain things, by me knowing that them personally, I would know how to deal with them because of that personal experience. But the prison official look at that as being an inmate lover. You know, you being an inmate lover because they want to project this image like a prison guard supposed to be some tough guy and rude and all of this. But that don't always work in the prison system. And so when you do try to assist people that do have mental condition, it needs to be where an officer don't be targeted. That's something that needs to go in the bill too, because a lot of time good officers would allow things to go on because they're afraid of retaliation from the prison authorities, and they should be protected because, you know, I was a victim of that.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, we need to facilitate better communication between officers and the administration so that they can make complaints about fellow police officers, fellow correctional officers, without worrying about retaliation. Now, that is a big issue, and I think it's something that will be a good subject for your next radio show, because your show is integrity and law enforcement and corrections. How can you reach that level of integrity if prison guards and police officers who have observed negative behavior in their partners and the people they work with, behavior that disrespects the human rights of citizens in the community or disrespects the human rights of prisoners, they need to have some way to relay this to prison authorities or to their superiors in the police department without fear of retaliation. And that is not the climate we have right now, and it needs to be developed. Otherwise, these atrocities that we hear about so often